Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 315, my conversation with freestyle rap artist David B.S. Bradshaw. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. You know, when you have an Audible account and you maybe, just as an example, are like super busy with work, so you like don't even look at your Audible app, the fun thing is each month when you get your monthly fee taken out, they give you a credit and it pops up in your account. And if you don't look at it for a little while, man, you get a lot of credits. I was like, oh man, I should probably look at Audible since I'm going to talk about it right now. And I'm like, hey, wow, I can get all these books. And hopefully soon I will have like 2 seconds to listen to a book because it's so cool and it's so nice. And I sure would like to listen to a lovely voice tell me a story because that sounds like a dream right now. And you can be part of it as well if you go and get your own Audible account. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by podcastcadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband Chris and I run to help podcasters. We have all sorts of knowledge because of doing all of this podcasting, and so we just want to be there for you. So if you need help with anything, organizing, writing, editing, whatever it might be, let us know and we can help. We talk to lots of different people every week. We give them advice. Sometimes we help them with stuff. This is just sort of a service here for you guys who want to make podcasts as well. And if we can help you, let us know. Go to podcastcadet.com, check out the videos that are there, or contact us through the website and let us know how we can help you. Podcastcadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chatted with beatboxer David B.S. Bradshaw about his love for performing freestyle rap and teaching workshops. Listen into this delightful conversation about embracing who you are as an artist and helping other creatives to do the same. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 315, David B.S. Bradshaw on his passion for empowering creative people. Enjoy! I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
So I grew up, I was a move around kid. So I was born in New York, bopped to Alabama for a little while, then popped up into like the Philly suburbs, and then moved to New York City at 18, and I've been in New York City ever since. I think I was very like imaginative with my play. I never really considered myself a creative person. In hindsight, I had some really creative ways to get out of all of the creative classes and the things that they tried to make me do. I'm colorblind, right? So like most people, like I think color deficient would be a more appropriate term. Like certain colors blur together, right? Like blue and purple is just blurple to me. Now you have dark blurple, you have light blurple, but it's like this continuum of blurple.
Sure.
And they told me in preschool that I didn't see colors right. So, you know, you tell a kid that they don't see something right, or you tell a kid that they're some, you know, you're a good kid, you're a bad kid, whatever. The kid starts, you know, you start to kind of become that. So they told me I saw colors wrong. So I stopped paying attention to colors. I just dressed in like black, gray, white, like whatever I could identify and just feel comfortable with. But when it came time to like name states and capitals and then color them in, little pissant me in kindergarten, first grade, walked up and was like, I'm not doing it, I'm colorblind, I can't do it. And they were like, yes, you can, you could just do the colors. I was like, I don't know what the colors are. And then I just started rattling off states and capitals. They just took the crayon, threw it on the table, and walked away. I've been a shit starter from a young age.
Do you think that the reason why you were like resistant to doing the activities because you had some idea of what you wanted to do instead?
I think I saw it as the waste of time than that it actually was, the busy work that it actually was. I think I was cognizant of that from a young age, thought it was bullshit, so I gave them some of my own bullshit. You know, I think a part of me didn't want to get the colors wrong, because you just told you know what I mean? It's like a thing. It's like, this is, nope, it's this, nope, it's this, nope, it's this, nope. Do you see it this way? What color is that? Then people would almost always just, what color is that? What color is that? What color is that? And it just got real old real fast. And so like, I think I also have a thing with authority. Like, I moved down south. I wouldn't say yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Nah. Hell no. Not coming out of my mouth. But again, like one of those, but everyone does it. And I go, no. I just came from a place where nobody does this. What are you talking about, lady?
I know. Like, I told somebody the other day that growing up, somebody called me ma'am. And I was like, great. And here, I'm fine with it. It's good. But I was like, when I grew up, that was an insult.
Yes, yes. My mom would be like, oh my God, someone's calling me ma'am. Like, I'm not, oh, do I look that old? Do I like,
yeah.
You know, that wasn't my take on it. I just felt like it was, I mean, I didn't know the word.
Oh no, total culture shock. Yeah, yeah. But total different, like, I don't want to play by these new rules. Why are there new rules? Because I moved? Like, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm coming in, like, I'm half Cuban. So, like, hablo español, you know, I was raised bilingual. And it was so interesting to me that, and I was openly speaking Spanish and whatever. I didn't get a single weird look for speaking Spanish, but I did get weird looks for being the kid from the North, which I think is fascinating.
Yes.
Fascinating. Fascinating that was how they chose to other me. not what I would have thought would be the thing to do it, you know?
Totally.
It's wild and it's crazy to have a vocabulary for these things now, looking back on it.
Yeah.
I consider myself a late blooming creative. I didn't start rhyming and really writing raps until my later teen years, early 20s. Any music class, I hated it. Art class, hated it. I hated that art class so bad that I ruined that class for my two younger sisters who had the same teacher. Oh, pressure. Like I was like there with it. I mean, it's funny to look back on, especially Alabama times, like playing outside a lot. Like I was the creepy kid spying on all the neighbors and like going, like it was a development that's being constructed. So I'd run into the houses being built and take shit, like saw blades, like whatever I could get my hands on, and would like make little forts and hide them in the woods and like have this whole like super imaginative thing going on. In my mind, I was like training to be like some kind of superhero stuntman ninja. And sure. You know, I'll start young, so might as well start now. And like I'd be doing things like rope and finding pipes and create like little things to like hoist myself up onto trees that like had branches that were too high to reach from the ground, like wild little stupid
nice.
Shit like that.
Nice.
Yeah,
what a good use of the area. You know, it's like, oh, this poor kid has to live near all this construction trash. He's like, look at this treasure trove of amazing things I can turn into, like, my little, you know, MacGyver hut in the, you know, in the woods.
It was fucking amazing. Yeah. I've never had a time in life remotely like that before. And so, like, I mean, I was in Alabama from, well, again, you know, authority being what it is. They held me back in New York from first grade. I went to pre-first grade. I don't know. Maybe it was my colorblind shenanigans, or my dad says because my handwriting was really bad. But then I moved to Alabama and then I skipped first grade. So I'm already just like, everything everyone's telling me doesn't mean shit.
Like, yeah, I could see that. I could see that if you switch schools and all of a sudden realize that the rules were arbitrary, like what an early lesson to learn.
You because see colors it's true. This way, I see colors that way. Yes, yeah. Sir. Yes, ma'am. Everyone does it. No, no, not everyone does it. But this is propaganda. You know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very healthy sense of distrust developed early in life.
Yeah, it was like, it's just so early for you to acknowledge and sort of face your individualism, to like be aware that it's all just a vague construct that they're like trying to get us to, like, you know, You know, when you see the memes that are like, there's a reason why school is the same time that people usually have to work. Like, you know, it's like, oh man, so rough. They're like, they're not building it for you. They're building it for the parents. I was like, oh man, oh. Because there's so many things now in my like feed about like parenting, you know, now that I'm a parent, and I'm just like, oh man, what can I do? Like, how can I make this better? You know, I'm lucky.
I can only imagine.
I'm lucky. The schools in the magical wonderland are lovely. So, but that being said, every child is individual in their own way. And it's fascinating 100%. To see how, like you said, what they chose to other you with.
Yeah. It changed when I moved places. It changed, you know?
Like, yeah. It's almost like we were talking about earlier about how each town kind of has their own like choice of how they're going to like live their, like, what's the vibe here? What are we going to do? What are we as a group going to stand for and be about? And there's a sort of culture choice that happens in various things that get put out in the world about it. And then you just live that, right? Like I'm sure there's like soft, gentle human beings that live in New York City that like really aren't that interested in being around crowds. But those people aren't the ones that we're talking about. And when we talk in the larger culture of New York, it's like, no, they're all loud and they really love 1,000 people around them. And I was like, well, they're all different people. But there's a vibe, right? In the same way that Austin being a magical wonderland, it's like we're dancing in the rain and we're like having a lovely time and weirdly voting against our own interests, but it's fine. We're just going to instead, we're going to have breakfast tacos, you know, it's all
pimento
good.
Pimento cheese. No, not enough people know about pimento cheese.
Well, then there's the various delicacies of different areas. But it's just fascinating that, like, your life experience of moving around would, I don't know. Do you feel like your understanding of the world was, I'm going to say more adult, but I guess I just mean, like, I don't know, you were more cognizant of the complexity versus, you know, a lot of children kind of just are innocent until a while and then stuff happens to them after 18 and they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I feel like there's certain adult things. Again, I have a better vocabulary for it now, but there were certain things I was definitely, I think, introduced to earlier. I mean, my mom, she didn't call it privilege, but like the way she framed, what I now understand to be, like, for me, like, white privilege, white passing privilege, like, you look at me, I don't outwardly look Hispanic, like, whatever Hispanic looks like.
Right.
But it was, interesting because my whole life people have told me what I am. And I'm like, I'm just me, you know, Pennsylvania, I'm not white enough for the white kids, but I'm not, like, Hispanic or Latin enough. And so like I existed in this middle ground and my mom would always kind of be like, hey, never forget that there are people with similar backgrounds as you who speak the same language as you who are being treated differently because of how they look and how they sound. You don't have that. It was like, you have an English last name, you speak the language, you don't look like anything, you know what I'm saying? Like more just racially like ambiguous. Like she was like, you have all of the benefits with so few, if any, of the downsides, and not everyone is like that. And that's always stuck with me. Just watching it. But then also, you know, being in certain situations, and I grew up code switching. It was English with dad, Spanish with mom. Like code switching is a thing that came very, very naturally and very easy to me and gets me in trouble sometimes now when I speak, go from just conversational to like office workplace vernacular. Like it can throw people. But it was just really interesting to be like, you know, reading in class and I'd be reading and then a Spanish word would pop up and I'd pronounce it how I would pronounce it and the whiplash. Like from this is more of a Pennsylvania thing, the whiplash from the rest of the room was incredible. I'll never forget it. It felt so weird. I had no idea what to do with it, and I just grew up with people trying to tell me who and what I am, and I just further like dug my heels into like I'm me. I'm clearly out of category, and it took me a long time to be like that's okay. If anything, it's an amazing tool and an amazing asset. to exist in the gray space, because you can touch both ends of, you can go between both ends of the, of, I feel like, the spectrum, whereas other folks are kind of limited in how far they can move. Yeah, it's interesting being a mixed baby. I feel like the story of the mixed baby isn't told very often. And I think that's okay, but it's interesting to have that experience and just find a vocabulary to start relaying parts of like what that was like. Cause I think it is its own thing, and it's different for, I think, every mixed baby, you know, whatever you're mixed with, however people like seem to perceive you. Like, I feel like that story has so much variability within this realm of, I'm just me and I don't fit into people's labels, and they don't seem to like that. Why? So, you know.
Yeah. Man, I find it fascinating that you have had the ability now to reflect upon it and to sort of like see how it has affected you, and how it has improved or inspired some of the creativity in you later in life. I noticed that you seem to, I mean, certainly from the young age of like fighting back and being like, you know, don't put me in a box, you have confidence, you have like an innate belief that your thoughts are important. And I think that that is such a excellent tool. And weirdly, as I'm meeting people and having a child help me to understand this, I think it might be inherent. Like, I think it might be just like a thing about that person. You know, that they're like, I believe what I say is right, so okay. Whereas other people are looking for approval. And I think it's more often that there's the approval seekers in the world. Mm-hmm. And the trouble is that the approval seekers end up becoming that mass of people who are judging people for the way they say a word or the way that they look. And it's like, as you're talking, the only thing I'm thinking the whole time is like, what do they have a right to have an opinion about it? What does it matter to you? Well, this isn't your life. You live your life. I'll live mine. How about that? Like, that's such a, and I know that for me, that's my older understanding of the world coming in to try to like, when I was a kid, I wasn't like, excuse me, keep your opinions to yourself. Well, maybe I was. But I'm a confident kid. I was an older kid too. Like, I was in adults. My mom did politics. And so like, I was always at, you know, letter writing parties or picket sign holding places. And I'd walk around the crowd and be like, hey guys, how's it going? Doing great. Awesome sign. Great job there. Like, I was just like an older lady, but I'm 7. Right. So
that's amazing.
There's just a confidence to being who you are and making these decisions, like you're saying, like standing up for yourself, being aware that their othering of you isn't the reality. It's just their choice. And you're like, man, guys, what's going on? Like, even the idea of like them looking at you when you say, when you pronounce the Spanish word correctly, and you're like, I'm confused as to why you guys don't know what I'm saying when I'm the one saying the right thing. So.
Yeah. Like, it was a name. It wasn't even like, you know what I mean? It was Fidel Castro. Like, this is clear, like stained in my brain. But
this is actual name. Right. Yeah. It's like,
Fuck that guy and his whole family. You know,
sure. But that's how you pronounce his name.
We got intergenerational beef.
Sure. Yeah. As well you should. But that's how you pronounce his name. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I think for me, it took a while to develop that. Like, I was always like outspoken and explorative, you know. But it took a long time to come to peace with that. And I honestly think, I keep coming back to the being colorblind, but like the colorblindness, I think in a way really helps, because you could tell me it's whatever color, I still see it the way I see it. Nothing anyone tells me, like, it literally looks the same to me. And like, I thought peanut butter was green until I was 17. Like, and the looks from my family, from, mind you, when do you ever talk about what color peanut butter is? We're all eating it. It all looks the same. It tastes the same.
Right?
And they
also
were so,
you're like, it's
out
from a plant, right?
like
so why, I'm so confused why out. It's crazy. I thought it was plant colored, guys.
And like those kinds of things, like I grew up in Pennsylvania. I found rollerblading, like aggressive inline skating.
Aggressive.
Yeah. Well, you know, we were jumping around, like just throwing our bodies at handrails and over stairs and in the skate parks, doing like just stupid stunty things. And at the time, you know, skateboarding and rollerblading were like not cool. And skateboarding was like the, at the time, like the abusive older sibling. And so like, I also wasn't afraid to do things that weren't cool. Like, I love this. This feels good. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I recognized that maybe it was because I worked at the skate park, like whatever. But like, I've continued to find myself in this role. I think of it as like the insider's outsider. Like, it was always, fuck all of y'all, but you're cool. You can come hang. and like, regardless of what these larger broad strokes, like these groups are like, whatever, like I was allowed at different tables at lunch, you know what I mean? I could just like move. It was interesting to kind of see that. And it took so many years of different sorts of patterns, trying to do regular jobs and then imploding. You know what I mean? Like having, just coming to a point where it's like, I have been fighting my instincts for so much of my life. And yet when I listen to my instincts and I just follow that flow, everything seems to work out better than I could have imagined. Mm. Whoa, why don't I just do that all the time? You know, like, it took a long time to go from there or to there from, like, I remember the day that my conversational voice manifested. I was, like, maybe 3 years old, and we're at McDonald's when that was the cool thing to do, and the food looked more like the pictures, and I think there was less sludge in there, but, you know, no shade to any of, you know, eat what you eat, live how you live your best life. I just got food poisoning off McDonald's once and never again.
There you go.
But a Happy Meal, and I didn't like the toy. And my parents were like, totally like, well, whatever, your toy. You know what I mean? Like, well, if you want a different one, then you go ask for it. And I'm like 3 or 4 years old, and I have it, and I get in line, and I'm like terrified, you know what I'm saying? Like, can I please have this other one, please? And of course, the answer was like, sure. And after that, it was like activated. Like, oh, you just got to ask for shit? Like, okay, like I can do that.
Man, there's something really empowering that like 90% of humans don't even know that. Like the idea of like, yeah, you can just ask for it. Anything that you'd like, they can say no. Sure. Yeah, they might say no. Mm-hmm. But like you can always ask for anything at all. Like when I was joking earlier about how, you know, people who take improv classes think it's like two steps to SNL. It's not, but technically if you ask, it's much more possible.
Yeah.
If you fill out the forms and send in the paperwork to the right place, well, that's the first step. That's how you get there. Right. Like, you know, you're not going to get there without doing those things. So it's like you might as well. You might as well try.
Right.
Man, fascinating.
The more you believe in yourself, the easier it is for other people to believe in you too. Like,
yeah.
I think that's something people overlook sometimes. It's like that the power of that knowledge of self and belief in self is often contagious. And I mean, I think in its most, you know, in its sincere forms, I think it can come from a place from hubris or like ego. And sometimes that does still attract certain people. But I feel like if you just have this ability of grounding yourself in your inner peace, and I like to think of from in a place of love, you know, love for yourself, love for like just, you know, I think it's so much easier to be in that place of like, I'm doing things, I am progressing. Progress is beautiful. Progress is something to celebrate, even if it looks like this tiny little nudge forward or if it's just this giant leap over some chasm. I feel like being able to hold those things and celebrate those tiny things makes it so much easier to stay believing in yourself, which in turn makes it easier for people to believe in you and what you're doing. And the more people, I wrote an old, this is a line I wrote like forever ago, but it was something to the effect of like, am I delusional? Maybe. But the more people I pull into my delusions, the less and less they start to feel crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people sleep on that, the power of belief. Belief is a drug, and I think one that can be used with amazing positive consequences. But again, it starts with yourself, and then the more people believe in you, I think the easier it is then to also continue believing in yourself. Then the trick becomes, don't let it go to your head.
Yeah.
whole other thing. But well, I feel like
I personally think it's just too, it's like different intentions. Like you're saying, mm-hmm. like if you believe in yourself with this idea of like positivity and like, I want to infuse in myself a confidence so that the people who listen to me also feel this confidence. Like, absolutely, that positive vibe you're putting out there will attract back the positivity that you're looking to. But the people who are confident through things like hubris and ego, like you were saying, there's a negativity tainted in there. So they will attract people, but they're not going to attract the right people. And they'll always feel hungry, even though they have enough to eat. Like,
yes.
It's never going to fulfill what they need, because you're right, the positivity out is what brings the positivity back in.
Right.
And like sometimes, and here's something, and I know that I feel like you and I are, people are going to listen to this and be like, yeah, you two like yourselves and that's fine. Good for you. but like that's, yes, we clearly do like ourselves and that's good. But the idea is I still have to manifest it. I still every yes. day have to remind myself to be positive, to focus on the positive things. You think I made it through 2.5 years of having zero job at all by being like doom and gloom? I mean, maybe the first few weeks, but like after that, it was like, what are the positive aspects? What are the things I can take out of this? Like once I got through the initial panic attack that like the world was in, and mm-hmm. and also there's something interesting about like choosing in a moment of darkness to be a little bit of light for people, like, and because it's always dark, there's always bad things, there's always stuff that's going wrong, it's never gonna not go wrong. But if you choose instead to focus on being positive, and it's not always, I mean, I'm not every day feeling happy, but when I'm putting myself right. out there, I am putting myself out there in a positive way. Am I like always satisfied with every decision I made in my life? No, absolutely not. But when I'm analyzing it in my head, when I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, I did this and that caused this to happen. That's already happened, so I can't change that. What can I do? Well, let's try to figure out how to make this thing that I have, which I didn't want, but now I have, mm-hmm. something that's going to work out for me, right? In whatever yes. way. Like,
yes. It's the framing. It's the framing. And I think it really does start with how you talk to yourself when no one's around or no one's listening. Like I had someone once tell me, you could look at it as a problem and you could look at it as an opportunity. Like, this is a thing that's looking to be filled. Like, the other thing I always come back to also is like, what is the lesson here? Like, my mom used to say, you win some, you learn some. And
nice. Go mom.
Yeah. Like, what is the lesson in this? What can I take moving forward? Like, I remember I had this belief since I was very young. I don't believe in regrets. You can choose to believe in regrets. That's a construct that one can subscribe to, sure. But I see life as a learning experience. And if I learn something from this experience, then if I were to regret it, then I'd be regretting the me that I've evolved into, which I feel, as we've already had, talked in this conversation, I feel good about. so why would I, like, even if it was something really, like, maybe I made a shitty choice. I did a shitty thing. No, I'm definitely not perfect. I am a flawed human being, just like all the other human beings, 100%. And that's usually my lead in, but at the same time, it's like, if I can learn from this, then I'm better off. If I'm willing to share and be open about it, especially in my art, I remember talking about vulnerability in art. Like, I read somewhere, and we really, again, like, I wish I could shout out where I'd read it. ADHD brain.
But it's okay. You can send me your bibliography later.
There we go. but like when you talk about those things that make you really uncomfortable, when you become a really your most vulnerable self, or tap into that really vulnerable side of yourself, and even if it is something that you did that's like bad or like shameful, like when you release that and allow other people to hear it, like you heal people who are like you. You create like a relatable touch point with folks, and you never know how something you say or something you do while you're not even thinking or realizing it could impact somebody else in a really positive way. I mean, I guess potentially in a negative way too, but I guess it's all about, like, I think what kind of energy that you're putting out. And something we didn't talk about, but I think also fuels into this whole conversation is what are you contributing, right? Like, what value are you giving? And maybe that is like just being vulnerable and giving other people that same permission in a way to be vulnerable. Like if I'm in a cipher and I'm freestyling and I talk about how I just went through like a breakup or something, and I'm open about that with my participants or peers, whatever that might be, it almost opens up the door of like, oh, we can talk about this here now. You're doing it so someone else can do it. And it's not because I'm special. It's not because I have any sort of status in this circle. Like, no, we're all equal. We're all standing in the circle. We're all looking eye to eye. We're all equal, you know, but just having one person open that door of vulnerability or even just telling a story from your past, like not even like some horror story or just like, man, I remember when I was a kid and had like Saturday morning cartoons and I wasn't allowed to eat anywhere but the kitchen, but I would sneak down there and I get this Count Chocula and I put chocolate milk in it and I eat it right in front of the TV before anybody woke up because I'm a do me, you know, but even going in that direction, right? Like I feel like it opens a door for folks and then they start thinking about what that could be for them. And if they feel it, then it opens the door for them to share without like putting the whole session or the activity in like a headlock and being like, how are you going to share deep personal things? It's just like, no, here's the thing you can do. And I think that's like a different kind of like value, right? Like, and people come to art for different sorts of things. And whether you're just performing or you're teaching or any sort of like expression or sharing, I think that's a good question, like a guiding question to have. It's like, what value am I giving? That for me, I found the most success once I started adopting that mentality. What can I give? What do I see as an opportunity to give something that I feel really, really good about? I feel very confident in my own skill sets and the ability to impart these things, or like what part of myself might inspire folks to embrace this part of themselves and like accept it, even if it is like a dark, like part of myself that I don't feel good about, you know, like being able to cast a light on the shadow. Yeah. I think helps other people do the same. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I hope all that made sense.
100% it did. 100% it did. You know, so we're talking about you in your role now where you're leading workshops. How did you get to that point in your creative development that you were like, I'm not just making art. I'm not just playing around doing some things on my own. Now I want to share it with other people and teach. What happened that changed, flipped that switch for you?
So I came up like rapping in the park on the corner, like freestyle ciphers, rapping on the trains. Like for a long time, all of my friends were hip hop artists of whatever sort of sub denomination, you know, whether they were producers, DJs, MCs or dancers or graffiti writers, whatever. It was a while before I had quote unquote normie friends again. for some time. And I was an angry kid. I found the battle, like battle rapping is what found me first. Shout out to Freestyle Mondays, longest running live band, freestyle open mic in New York City. Going on 20 some years now. I was 19 with my cousin's ID sneaking in so I could rap and explode on people because that's what I felt like I needed to do at the time. Freestyled, and at the time, like the thing that validated, you know, you as a rap artist was the album. So I did like a few collaborative projects, was in a duo for a little while, worked with a bunch of like people like in like the, at the time in the scene, and then later released a few records through Tommy Boy, and had a moment of like the internet paid attention to me, which is great and also something less than great, you know. Had enough attention to get a nice, you know, a couple dollops of either a column A, column B. and around like the time afterward, like I'd had a falling out with a producer I was working with. I was in a relationship that also like coincidentally, like she was also working with the label. She was also working with the same producer. The ground fell out of everything all at once. In like 9 days, I watched my life just like, and a part of me was like, fuck this. Fuck all of this. I'm done. It was like a thing that turned into like a communication of feeling. All of a sudden in my head became this, Oh, so it's not a song, it's a key, and it's a key that opens a door, and there's a hallway with all these other doors, and then there are no labels, and once I pick the right door, I'll be successful. And I couldn't get out of that. And then with the, just on the personal end, so much of the support that was there just gone. I went into like a dark place for a bit. And then, I finally started getting my shit back in order. And I was working like an admin job. I had an office. It was finally weird to think about now. I was an admin over at Teachers College at Columbia University. And which led to its own kind of cool little thing. But I had a friend of mine, Michael, who was just like, you'd make a great teacher. And I joined New York City Teaching Fellows program shortly thereafter and spent some time teaching dual language, English, Spanish. I was teaching second grade. The lesson plans had to integrate both languages. I was doing full-time teach, full-time grad school. And it was a crazy thing where I really cared about doing a good job, but the school's telling me one thing. The things you're learning in grad school are telling you a different thing. And then the program is telling me a third thing. And then by the time I realized what the right thing to do was, it was too late to implement any of it. And that drove me crazy. So for me, that didn't last. And then shortly thereafter, I had a homie reach out to me and was like, hey, this nonprofit is looking to do hip hop teaching. And I'd already done volunteering in homeless shelters and teaching folks how to rap, how to beatbox. It was something I was doing. I'd meet somebody. We'd just be walking down the street, be like, oh, I like rap. And I'd be like, oh, come over. I got this home recording set up and we can hang out and write raps and but I don't know how to do it. Who cares? It's just about getting down with the get down. That's always how I've seen it. The joy of community. I met my best friend Gray Matt, who was a beatboxer, and that's when I realized I don't have to be mad to do this. I can be mad and do this, and that's okay. I also don't have to be. I can have fun and play, and there's a whole group of people to play with. And shortly at this point, I realized that with my teaching background and with my at that point probably almost a decade of active, I'm an MC. I came in, I was BS 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'd be at the bar, I wouldn't even be rapping. Oh, what's your name? Oh, hey, I'm BS. BS, bullshit. That's right. Your mom doesn't call you that? Yes, she does. No, she doesn't. Your dad doesn't call you that? Yes, he does. No, he doesn't. It's who I have been, And after a certain point, I realized that I have this experience, all of these skill sets. I find myself in a very, I don't want to say it's a unique position, but I have yet to meet someone else with the same dual pedigree. Being able to I live this life, I have actively lived this life, and this is a part of my DNA. And also I have these skills, this training from this, in this formalized way, and I know how to combine them. So I started working with a bunch of different nonprofits, and a lot of from songwriting to freestyle work to beatboxing, loop station with the beatbox, adults down to first graders. I used to work in D75 schools with special needs participants. I work with they're not incarcerated. I was working with incarcerated youth. The youth I'm working with now are not incarcerated, but they're in the system. And so as part of their community alternatives program, I'm the music guy. So everything I've done kind of has had a pretty strong emphasis on social and emotional learning and development kind of inherently from the jump. So it's been cool to be able to take all of these things, put them together. And since the pandemic, I've been able to kind of cut the nonprofits very, amicably, but I realized I could do my own thing and I'm not at the beck and whim of an admin who's never sat in a lesson or taught one of these sorts of lessons trying to tell me what to do from their desk. And, be able to assign my own worth to my work. And then I feel like it's been the Wild West of the pandemic. If you can hold your space, then it's yours. And so I've been able to do that. So now, most of my work is for myself. I run a company called Freestyle Fitness NYC. It's now it's virtual, but, rap workout for your brain, an improvised rap workout for your brain. And I work with Freestyle Love Supreme, Freestyle Love Supreme Academy. I'm their lead facilitator. And it's been interesting to watch all of these things that for most of my life I felt didn't make sense and didn't go together. And then the further I go from the closer to aerial view I get, it's like, oh, yeah, they do all fit together. And it didn't feel like it in the moment, which was a really powerful lesson for me to learn, where it's like, it's a lot of things will make sense later. They don't need to make sense right now. They will probably, something from this will make sense later, or I'll recognize this lesson that I learned here that led me to this, that led me to this person, that led me to this opportunity that has led to whatever. It's been amazing to kind of look back like that, because in the moment, especially some of those moments were really dark. They were really hard at the time. Like walking away from formal teaching was a really, really hard decision for me to make. It led me something else. Like I was talking to a friend about this the other day, where it was like, I spent 6-7 hours a day with my hand on the metaphorical stove while I was full-time, like regular teaching, which I wouldn't have the appreciation in my other work now. I know how to talk to teachers. I know how to talk to administrators. I know how to get what I need at a site as the visitor and like the, oh, I'm the guest. I know how to navigate those conversations. And at worst, I tap the stove. Ain't shit. I used to spend 6 hours, my whole hand on it. Like it's nothing. So it's just kind of amazing to like see without the weight of that experience, I wouldn't have an appreciation for what I have and how I do it. With every cycle of lessons, I realize another thing that I gleaned from these more formal times, or from being thrown into a situation where I'm teaching a group of 30 first graders in the South Bronx how to beatbox. And legally, there's supposed to be two other people in that room, but there's nobody else in there. It's just me, and it's, you know what I'm saying? Figure it out and go. So being able to take all of these things, have my weird, like very non-linear life path and experience path artistically and professionally, and be able to create a container where I can put all those pieces in and allow them to place themselves in a sequence and in a style that makes sense. But I'm the only one who can do it because it's my experience and nobody else has the same, you know, conglomerate of experience. That's been a really valuable lesson in there too. Like creating a container for myself to put all the pieces in and then allowing them to make sense of themselves and look back on it and be like, you know, have that moment, that like kind of epiphany moment. Very, oh my God, very, very gratifying after years of doubt. And you should do real estate and you know, your cousin's really successful in real estate and you're already doing some work in the office. I'm like, yeah, because I'm trying to do this music shit. He's going to give me cash. Like, I just got to dress up and walk people to an elevator. Like, yeah, hour and a half, easiest $50 I ever made. You know, like, I got to be pleasant and talk about the weather. Easy. but it's been it can be hard when you have a lot of voices, you know, that are trying to push and pull you in a different way because they think that's what's best for you because they're scared for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm at a point now where I'm like, keep that energy the fuck away from me. Like, no, we can celebrate things. There's no room for doubt over here. I appreciate you're concerned, but like your life path has taken you on this like nice paved, like super highway. Whole lot of people go on that super highway and that's awesome. I hope the songs on the radio are jamming and you are having a great time and that traffic is moving fluidly. I'm over here on this back road and the signs aren't always so clear. And I've accepted that as part of my journey. You know what I mean? But like what works for you on the superhighway isn't going to work for me in the back road. So please don't give me advice from the superhighway that pertains to the superhighway because I'm not wired that way and that's not my journey.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You know, to be honest, like I'm glad that you framed it that way because excellent metaphors throughout, by the way. But, but like the idea of what other people and their opinions and how we have to navigate through those all the time. Like, and you have to decide whether or not you're going to honor those, like, okay, I'll give those some thought. Or if you really can just say, it's okay. We have different paths. We're going to live our lives differently. And even just being strong enough to accept that your alternative path is the right one. But you know what? Something that you've mentioned, like, even as a tiny child, you were like, I am not interested in your rules, woman. And I think that there's something to be said about that as a sort of inherent, like I was talking about how we have this inherent confidence, right? I also have this inherent like distrust of authority. Like when someone tells me I have to do something, I have to recognize the feeling in myself where I immediately do not want to do that thing. And sometimes there's a voice that has to be like, wait, but is it the thing that's going to get you what you need in this scenario? And I'm like, okay, yes, I do have to do that. Okay, that's fine. But like at first, anytime anyone, because I am, you know, individualistic as well. I have made all my own decisions. I've done whatever I wanted. When people tell me, I'm all like, okay, cool, great. Have a great day. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing now. Thanks though. And it's just the way I am. People love giving advice too, right?
Yes.
And I'm like into advice when it's large and generic, like when it can be like applied to a bunch of different things. Like I enjoy my therapist. He's quite helpful because he'll give me a some phrase and then that thing will touch on like seven different moments in the weeks that I don't see him. And then I'm all like, it's crazy how that thing makes sense with all the, you know what I mean? So it's more of a larger, wider platitude that is helpful. You know what I mean? Like saying stuff like, you know, sometimes things don't go well. So it's okay if it doesn't, just try to keep moving forward, right? That's helpful. But like, I love your metaphor of the highway and the back road, but it's like, no, it isn't take exit 42 because there's not an exit 42 over here. Right. Like I understand what you mean by exit 42, but mine's like take a left at the hippo that's not supposed to be there and also avoid the swamp. Like that's what my exit 42 is, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, it's so hard though to navigate because especially in this world of social media where we're sort of, it seems inherent that we have to care what other people say. I mean, there's so many scenarios in our culture right now where we're trying to put down bad behavior. And unfortunately, the people of bad behavior are trying to clap back on this idea of like, oh yeah, rules. Well, then fine. There's lots of rules. And you're like, okay, listen. We're just telling you not to be a jerk. We're not saying like you can never speak again.
Right.
Like you can write whatever you like on the internet. Tell us about your fishing trip. How's that truck going? But you don't have to say, I hate you because you've made your life choices this way. These are just different ways to say words. Like, you know, why can't we just live our own lives, enjoy our own lives or not? Man, I hate that truck. Worst truck. and okay, great. Sorry about that truck, bro. I got a guy who can help fix that for you if you like. You know, like, you don't have to be any one way, but you can't tell other people how to be. I feel like that's such a huge lesson with my child as well, because I feel like it's like an inherent thing that kids, every human being wants to like understand things by comparing it to something else, right?
Yes. Oh, comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes. Oh my God, man, I am ready to jump into a huge rabbit hole and I've got to dial back. Hold on. I'm reeling it back. We have been talking about how, you have been developing now your own business and how you, since the pandemic, you have had the ability to connect with people online and to teach classes more on your own. How for you has that been business-wise since the world has kind of dialed into vague normalcy? Hard to tell. In Austin, it seems very normal, but 90% of activities are kind of outside already. So there's that. Yeah. Whereas New York City, I feel there's a tightness. So like, how has it transitioned for you in the last, say, year?
It's been really great. All in all, like freestyle fitness started out pre-pandemic as like a monthly thing. It was a 3 or 4 hour, like oh, we're gonna do work. You know what I'm saying? And by the end, you're gonna have words falling out of your nose. Like, kind of thing. When someone asks you to freestyle and you're not asked to do all of this other crazy shit while you're freestyling, it's gonna feel so easy. and then pandemic happened. I was working in schools with all of these nonprofits, and obviously all those sites closed. Everything shut down. And so for me, it was like, fuck. I am fucked. If I don't figure out how to do this, I have no way of making money. I have no income. Like, what do I do? And I got really fortunate. A friend of mine, you know, shout out to Serenade, was like, hey, BS, you know, I've been really fucking around with this. No, she wouldn't say fucking around, but that's, I'm editorializing. Sorry, Sarah, I don't mean to put words in your mouth. But she was like, hey, I want to learn, like, work on my beatboxing. I want you to teach me. And I was wondering if maybe we could get like a small group of people together. Like that would be, because we already have friends who are interested in freestyle rap, beatbox, you know, like lots of circles of folks. So it was one of those things where she was like, would you be down to like just try it out on Zoom? And I was initially a little hesitant and resistant to virtual. I've been approached to do virtual things pre-pandemic. And I'm, it's not the same. And it's not the same. It's not. It is so much better than nothing, you know, exponentially better than nothing. But there is a difference in the energy that one can give and receive through a screen. It is a filter of sorts. Again, I don't think it's a bad one. It's just tomato, you know, orange, or orange tomato, or strawberries, whatever. I'm losing my metaphors. The rest of them were way better than this one. But it started with that. And then I realized that what I was doing is 3-4 hour things. I have this whole like year or two of lesson plans that I could subdivide. And then I realized, I was like, oh, all right, I have this big thing. I can break it down into smaller chunks. Like people don't want they don't want to be at their screen for 3 hours. I don't want to be at the screen for 3 hours, you know, typically. So it was the kind of thing where it was like, oh, I can take all of this work I've already done. I can modify it for this medium and I can find a way. Like, I was up and running virtually before any of the nonprofits that I was working with at the time. Any of the folks I'm working with now, I had my virtual shit up and running like a month and a half, 2 months before they did, and was able to work through the kinks and figure it all out. All thanks to my friend Sarah, who was like, why don't we try the thing? And that became the thing that continues to pay my bills. There have definitely been people, like, I've been watching waves of folks. Like, some people come in like in the beginning of the pandemic, oh my God, I need something. I need some kind of connection. I need to play. And those folks came in and they were like, man, virtual isn't for me. Or like, I do enough screen stuff on my 9-to-5. This is great. You're awesome. Let me know when it's happening 3D. You know, there's been stuff like that. But then there have been other folks like across the country or in other countries. I've got someone in Berlin. I've got a couple folks in the UK, like people like down from Miami, Kentucky, all Midwest, down South, LA, San Francisco, like all over, we would have never had access to one another without this. And the community, this little community that, I have been contributing to build, because I think everyone builds it. I don't feel comfortable saying it's mine. Like, I feel like I'm just a really interested party providing structure who is just really, really hyped because I live in this rabbit hole and so excited that people want to like come with me down the rabbit hole. You know what I mean? Like, I might be holding a big torch, but they're holding torches too. And my job is to make sure their torches stay lit while we explore together. So it's been the kind of thing where like I've realized, and it's such a blessing and it's so humbling. Like, I took a few weeks off to jump across the pond and spend a few days in Germany. And the reactions I got from my folks when I came back, I've been feeling like I just need to play. Like, it's been too long. I'm like, it's been 15 days, maybe. You know what I mean? The kind of thing where like in my head, I was just like, wow, like, oh, I've gotten worse now because I haven't been practicing. Like this is what happens when you leave. You know, like, I'm like, what? Like it's so humbling. And meanwhile, I'm like, I'm here and you're doing the work. Like, I'm providing some structure, sure. But like, you, person, friend, participant. I mean, I don't know. I have friends who do my shit and friends who don't do my shit. I feel like calling my folks, I don't feel comfortable calling people student. Like, I don't like that. participant feels cool, but at this point, so many folks who do my shit are, they become homies if they weren't homies already. So I need to find a new name. Like Friendticipant is one I've been throwing around, but even that doesn't feel like it does it justice, you know? But like being able to connect and build with folks like that, create this little pocket community where like I've got a core groups of folks, and I've got folks who are kind of in orbit who pop in and pop out. I've got folks I see maybe once or twice a year, like, but it's been established now to the point where people know they can keep coming back. And like, for me, it's all love, always, doors always open, arms always open. You know what I mean? Live your life. If your life gives you, this is where you feel called and you want to stay here, awesome. If you want to leave the pool and then come back and visit when there's a pool party because of whatever, like, that's cool too. Like, the pool's always open, you know? Always here. Like, the mission is just to empower creative folks. I want people to continue creating and feel more empowered and have more energy to create after we interact, even if we never interact again. You know, like, that's my mission. I want folks to continue creating because I believe the world is a better place when people are happy, and people are happy when they feel acknowledged, when they feel heard, when they feel like they've expressed themselves, and it doesn't just go into some black hole or some echo chamber. People feel acknowledged, people feel like connected, people are playing. Like, I think this makes the world a better place. And if I can do that in my little tiny niche corner, little slice of it, like, then I've done my job. And I try to do it in an accessible way where, you know, each one, teach one, and then pay it forward. Like, this is a thought virus. We're spreading a thought virus, and we have positive consequences in this sound-making, musical, freestyle, improv thought virus. You're active listening, increasing vocabulary. You are forced to take other perspectives. You can take opposing ideas and literally put them in rhythm and sometimes even harmony with one another. Like, you are boosting your own self-awareness. Like, I don't know how many times you like improvise something. It happens to me with freestyle all the time. And I'm like, oh shit, I am feeling that. Oh, I do feel like this about that. Whoa. Like, having an outlet, a container to put feelings into that we can't and don't want to carry 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is all of that. And so, like, I don't know, on one hand, it's like I'm teaching freestyle rap, but I feel like these are really like language and life tools. Language is one of the primary ways that we engage with life and people, you know. That's how we manifest ideas, right? You got to be able to see it in your head, think about it, and then language it out, whether that's written, verbal, or whatever, to be able to manifest these things that you see in your mind's eye and that calls you from somewhere beyond you, you know, whatever that might be. I'm a the universe powers that be kind of guy, but you know, whatever that is for oneself. And I just see it as it's such a beautiful thing. And for me, like, no matter how good or how shitty I feel before I go into a session, I always feel better when it's done. And that's how I know I'm doing what I need to be doing for me. Mm-hmm. Like, now better might be still shitty. You know what I mean? Like, it might be, you know, but I always walk out better, no matter who I'm working with, what the context, what I'm teaching, what, you know what I mean? In my wheelhouse of hip hop arts education, I always walk out feeling better and feeling closer to folks and more connected. And I like to think they feel the same with me and with each other.
You know, it's like what we were talking about earlier, though. It's the energy that you put out. You are creating a space for people. You are holding space for human beings to express themselves, to have these emotional moments, to, you know, live in the world. And, you know, you put that out for them. And then when they give you back that energy. That's why when you finish, you have this strong positive reaction, because you open the whole experience with a openness, with giving them mm-hmm. space. And so they give you back this positivity.
Yeah. And I think being your authentic self, whoever that is in your human suit that day. Like, I realized at one point I felt like, oh, I'm a professional. I need to have my professional game face on. And I was going through some tough things. And I couldn't help, like, I feel like freestyle, at least freestyle rap, I think just goes for most sorts of improv. Like, it can be a truth serum. And it's let go or be dragged. You could fight trying to release the thing, but like, it was just so much better to like share what was happening in my life with the folks there. And then realizing, that they've been doing that with me, that I've created a space where they could already do that with me, and how they communicated to me, like, how so okay it was for me to do the same thing was such a mind blowing, like, and in hindsight, it's like, yeah, well, duh, you're like, you know, that's the way this, you know, everything has been kind of like set up, but, it's been cool to like see one's own medicine come back around and like come back to you when you need it the most. It's been a really powerful experience in that way. And what's been communicated to me, it's like, no, it's like you're showing that you're a fully functional human being. There are so many more emotions, and you're giving the rest of us permission to be ourselves that day, that even if we feel like we are not our best selves, that is still enough. And it is okay to be that self here. Just like, again, humbling as fuck. It really is a pleasure and a privilege to get to do this. It's a luxury to get to do this to this point. And again, I've been through, slugged it out in the trenches, and like, I've, you know, been at a point where like I wished that I could make my money and pay my bills off art, that I wish I had the problems I have now. And it is like an incredible thing to have a container where one can embrace all of the imperfections, the beautiful imperfections that are the human experience, and just surrender to that moment as a collective. It's a powerful thing.
There's also something really strong about your conviction to maintain the choice, that even though, yeah, you know, you had some office jobs, you had various other things to get through it, your eye was on the prize, and it was like, yeah, I'll do whatever I need to do to get there, but I'm going to get there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something to believing in yourself and continuing to work towards that goal that many of our brethren who are currently real estate agents just let go in themselves. Yeah. They didn't believe in themselves, or their path is perhaps something else. I mean, I think there's lots of things in life that, you know, maybe you as an individual want to accomplish. And sometimes to accomplish those things, being a real estate agent is exactly the right choice.
Yes.
Like, and I think it's just assessing, getting to a certain age where you decide, what way do I want to live my life? What situation? Like, I am so with you in the, I can't have a boss now. Like, I can't work at a place where they give me a rule that like doesn't make sense. You know, like, I can't do it because I've lived so much of my life taking care of myself and doing my own things. And like, and like, you can't tell me some fake tax thing. I've done all the taxes. Like, I have a CPA. There's so many things that I'm aware of. Like, you know, I've lived this life and I'm in it. And I've chosen to go this path, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so it's hard to, no shade to the people who are real estate agents or, again, have a thing that they want to do where, like, they need that kind of thing to balance it out.
If it works for you, it works for you. And ultimately, I've had days where I wished that worked for me.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. It doesn't.
I mean, everyone does their own, like, adjacent thing as well. Like, I know people, there was a guy that I knew back in the day who used to take photos of houses for real estate agents because he wanted to be a photographer. But that was a job that was, like, just two steps adjacent to what he wanted to do. And it's like, whatever thing it is, you know, that you want to do, there's a bunch of jobs all around it that can give you knowledge in the world you want to be in. And there's no shame in doing any of those jobs, especially if it turns out they're lucrative, man.
Right.
Like, take the cash and then go do whatever you're going to do with it.
That's it. Speaking to that, it's one of those, I think you got to be open. Like, if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be doing this now in this way, I would have laughed. Like, I wouldn't have, you know, like, I'd be like, where's the album? You know, like, it would have been, it's a whole different set of guiding questions, whole different set. Like, I think if I'd planned to do it this way, I would have fucked it up somehow along the way. Like, this was never the plan, you know, but kind of like keeping myself in a place of honest observation and doing my damnedest to remove judgment from those honest observations. It's one of the things that has, you know, led me here today, you know, in this current leg of the journey.
Yeah.
It's wild to think about, and also to know myself, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like, it sounds like we're similar in this regard, where like, as much as I would love money to be enough for me, it's not. I have certain friends who have left creative things and they're like, yeah, but you know the money, man. And I'm like, cool. I see all of these times where you're unhappy because you come to me and express all of your unhappiness. It's all about the work, which is all about the thing that gives you money, but this is the thing that still gives you satisfaction. Cool. I guess that works for you. That doesn't work for me. And then bashing my face against that wall over and over again, eventually it's like, you go in a different direction. So you don't bash your face in the wall. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of possibilities that you can take in your life. And I think you're right that you might not know what path you are on. Like, you didn't know you were headed where you are, but occasionally, you know, you just got to reassess your toolkit and be like, mm-hmm. What did I get? Like, what do I know now that I didn't know before? And what about the stuff that I've done? Do I like or dislike? You know what I mean? Yes. Because you have life experiences in whatever way that you have those life experiences. And then you just reinvent them into who you're going to become as it goes forward. Now, a lot of times those things are negative and people feel like they can't get out of these negative scenarios. And it's like, okay, but you can do whatever you need to do. Mm-hmm. Like, there is and I think that there is, as we've established in our similarities, there is a like defiant, the rules don't really apply to me kind of vibe of us. And I think that's helpful for feeling empowered enough to make whatever decision. But to those of you who might be listening, who are like, I would love to do that, but there are rules to doing things. I getcha. Every culture's got specific rules. You can't do certain stuff. I got it. But there is wiggle room. And whether or not your parents or grandparents like it might not be the thing that needs to stop you if your path is something. You know, like if it's just like, well, everyone in the family's a doctor, you got to be a doctor. Okay, but wouldn't you rather have a doctor who loves being a doctor than a doctor who has to be a doctor?
Ooh.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like you want your surgeon to be the guy who's like, guess what? I'm amazing at being a surgeon. Watch this. Surgeoning. I'm doing it great. Like, he's excited. He's doing the thing for you. He's all 100%. Like, man, I nailed this heart surgery. I'm going to nail this. This is amazing. Like, as opposed to like, oh, God, another heart, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's cut what the artery. Like,
well, we talk about that, right? Like, the energy that you put out and then receive back. Like, you want that positive. You want that experience. You want that connection.
Yeah.
And, like, excitement.
Yeah.
And I think it's, like, requires some pretty sometimes harsh self-reflection work. Like, some really, like, to be like, well, this little nagging voice in my head that's telling me to like deviate from what everyone else is telling me to do isn't going away. It's not going away, and I can't ignore it. You know, when I try to, I can stifle it. I can disregard it, but I can't make it go away. And I think when you get to that point, that's when you need to like, I personally believe that's when like the change up happens. Like you realize that you've had this voice in your head for so long. And you've habituated, you know what I'm saying? Like trying to disregard it. And you have that positive reinforcement to disregard it from society, people with their best intentions for, you know, talking from the highway. But like, they don't know the dirt road. All they've heard are scary stories about the dirt road, and they don't want something bad to happen to you. And I think at that point is where like, you got to try out the dirt road. You can always get back on the highway. You might have to make it through a clearing in the forest to get back on the highway, but like there, you can always go back on the highway.
You know, to that point too, say you want to end on the highway. We're alive for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. Say you want to end on the highway. You're like interested in being on the highway, right? It is helpful to spend some time on the dirt road for two reasons. One, you learn how to, you know, fix the tires when they break. You learn how to get out of the ditches in the road because there's a ton on the dirt road, right? Mm-hmm. And then other thing is, once you get on that highway, and I love that we're maintaining this metaphor, once you get on that highway, the highway seems like luxurious and like way fancier than the other people who have been on it the whole time and are like, this is such a lame highway. Why am I still here? And you're like, guys, have you seen that the roads are paved? Like, this is wild. Dude, that sign just told me where to go. Like, I didn't even know there were signs.
Yes,
there's a sign telling me, guys, this is great. There's a rest stop. I didn't know you were allowed to rest. Guys, like, there are parts of life where, like, if you get your hands dirty and try to do some things that are a little wilder and, like, go on your own and make your own decisions, if you then turn the knowledge that you've learned in those experiences into something that maybe is more quote unquote normal, is like an office job or something, everything that you've learned can be used wherever. But if you want to get back on there, you're going to really appreciate it more.
Yes.
Because you didn't have that for a while.
Yes, yes. And it's a different perspective than when we're young and we're in the back seat of the same car on the highway and we're not driving.
Mm-hmm.
It feels totally different when you're just along for the ride, like childhood, right?
Mm.
And then versus making that choice yourself. And I feel like this is almost maybe a little condescending, but like, it's hard for folks who aren't exceptions to the rule to recognize one.
No, it's true. It's all about life experience. Like, if every day, I say that about attractive people, like shiny, attractive people, where like no one's confused about how they're attractive. Everyone is like, oh yeah, definitely he's attractive. Like, there's no one who's like, I don't know, he's not my type. No. This is everyone agrees. Their life experience is so charmed because people are like, oh, hey, let me give you stuff and like be nice to you.
Yeah.
Because they happen to look the way our current culture has decided is the shiniest of pebbles. We give them more. We let them do things. You know what I mean? And then they don't, and by no fault of their own, they don't know that they're like, wait, people don't just drive your car for you?
Yes.
No, valet isn't the same thing for everyone. It's like, I don't ever want in the legal system the idea of affluenza to be a reason for somebody to get off for a crime. But I do believe that there is something to that, that that person never had a life experience where they had to pay for something on their own. So they don't understand how paying works, right? Like, every bit of the best advice my mom ever gave me in my life was in my mid-20s, and I was having trouble financially, and she said to me, you need to stop living like you are middle class, like me and your dad. You now have to start living as if you're poor, because you are.
Mm.
And I was like, oh. She's like, you can't keep buying the things and doing the things that we did growing up that you're used to. You have to dial that down and budget it less because you don't have the same income that your dad and I bring into the family. And I was like, oh. And the idea that I needed to adjust was never something that I thought of because they, you know, had the money and paid the bills and didn't ask us about it. And yeah, I had a job growing up, but it was never like a, we need that job to pay the light bill kind of situation.
Right. Right.
So it never occurred to me. And only in the midst of my own life where I was like, I don't know how to keep money in my pocket. And they're like, okay, this is how. Don't spend it. Like different things where, and you're like, okay. All right. That is an interesting way to look at it. You know, but you just don't know what you don't know, right?
Right.
And
right.
So the beauty of our like life experiences, making these decisions, choosing to be creative and it working out, you know what I mean? I feel like it has to do with believing. It has to do with readjusting what our goals were and not being like, well, I didn't get a Grammy before I turned 25. I'm out.
Yes.
It's like the people who move to LA and if they don't get on a television show within their first year, they think they're a failure. And you're like, are you kidding me right now? How could you have met three people in LA in 1 year? Like, no, this is not, it's a very different situation. This is not Milwaukee anymore. You can't just make friends with the local casting director and get in everything. Like, things are different here. You have to readjust. And it's like that for everything. It's like that for every move that you make in your career, in your personal life, in your adult life. Yeah. Like, you just have to readjust.
And reassessment and modification can be scary. It most often is scary as hell. And, you know, I think that's I think that sometimes sets people off. You know, like, oh, this feels so scary. It must not be the right thing to do. Mm. Let me just keep doing what I'm doing. Like,
I feel like we're in this path already. So I want to ask you, what do you think, what is advice that you might have for people who want to be creative, but maybe are held back by the fears of, you know, money or maybe I'm not Brad Pitt. How could I possibly do that? Like, what do you say to them?
You're not Brad Pitt, but you're you. And art is the youest you that you could you. So I've got a thing. I like to call it the fuck it's. The fuck it's can be real contagious. Like, oh no, should I? Fuck it. Oh no, I don't know. Fuck it. I just made a mistake. Should I keep going? Fuck it. Yes, keep going. Like, you never know what you're going to say or do that will inspire other people or just attract people to what you're doing. And if you don't ever do it, or if you refuse to share it, and it's okay to not share. Like, I have plenty of things that I've written that will never see the light of day, or even recorded that will never see the light of day. You know what I mean? But, like, you got to make it. Like, you can make it. You are going to make it. It's going to be uncomfortable at times, and discomfort is the birthplace of brilliance, and necessity is the mother of invention. Like, keep going. The more laps you have around the block, I feel like we start with, like, a block of clay. And every pass around, it gets more and more defined. It gets more and more defined, and that awareness continues to increase. There's no cheat code. There's no fast forward. There's no nothing. You do the work. You take the long way. The long way is the shortcut. The only way to make it not feel like the long way is to do it with friends. If you are quote unquote practicing, but you're doing it with friends and people that you like really care about, then you're not practicing. You are hanging with your homies. And the more you can just hang with your homies and do the thing while you're hanging with your homies, the faster you will progress, the more fun you will have while doing it. And homies can be virtual. It doesn't need to be in person. Homies could be one person. Like, homies could be like, you send videos of yourself and have this like almost pen pal like exchange with somebody in fucking Nepal, wherever, whatever. But like, have creating that psychologically safe space within yourself first. And then outwardly is the, you know, practice makes progress. It's one of my biggest things. Practice makes progress. Practice makes progress. Practice makes progress. Perfection is not real. It doesn't exist. It is a lie. And you know what? If it did exist, it'd be boring as hell. It would be predictable. And you wouldn't want to fuck with it after a certain point in time. Now, progress is something that we can celebrate no matter what it looks like for any person. It could be a tiny thing. It could be a huge thing. But progress is something that can be individual, subjective, and still celebrated by the whole. So if we're focusing on progress, and again, I sometimes compare myself to other people, and I have to remind myself, I don't compare myself to other people. I compare myself to me 6 months ago, me a year ago, me 5 years ago, me 10 years ago. And it makes it so much easier to see the growth and the progress and then feel grounded in that. For those days, that's harder to believe in myself. For those days where maybe I had a negative, unexpected negative outcome that all of a sudden cast me with some kind of doubt. You know, mental health is real. I suffer from anxiety, depression. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit is real. And there are days where you really need that. And I feel like having all of these things in place makes it so much easier tracking your small wins. Like, you can't see it, but I've got like a whole bunch of chart paper up like behind the closet door, all of this. It's like, these are all things, like, these are my goals for the year. These are the things that I have done, even tiny things that helps contribute to those goals. So on those days where I'm like, fuck, I'm a failure. What the fuck am I doing? Why am I doing this? Because they happen. They totally happen. And you can go back to something and anchor yourself back in it. Like, just don't stop. Like, that really, it's really that simple. Start and don't stop. Don't create expectations for yourself. Don't expect to do something and have it turn into your job. Create the time to do it. Find something where you can love the process. You can love being in the dirt so that you don't care what happens afterward. Like not in like an I don't care, like careless way, in a carefree way where you're like, this is so fun. That's all I need. I'm satisfied because this is so fun. And then whatever's supposed to happen after that will happen after that. If you're coming from this pure place of enjoyment and fun and sincerity, then you're going to continue doing what you're doing. If that's reinforced by community, you're going to continue doing that in a more powerful way. And you never know where that might take you or inspire others just from watching what you're doing. The most brave human thing that we can do is watch somebody try. It's not what happens afterward. You know, it's like they take the leap. What happens in the air or even landing on the other side isn't important. It's you took the leap, and going from I've never tried this to I'm trying this right now is such a huge thing to celebrate. It's such a giant leap, and it can be horrifying. And like, that's okay. Like, you did the thing. I feel like you observe, hey, I would have, you know, I missed that line. I would have really liked to do it this way. Okay, noted. Boom. It's not good. It's not bad. It just is. And there's always going to be the next line, the next verse, the next song, the next performance, the next collaboration, the next group to hang out with. There's always going to be a next thing. Whatever you're doing in that moment isn't your first or your last. So don't treat it that way. And don't put that pressure on yourself, and just have fun. Fuck it.
Fuck it. Oh, man. Good. Awesome. And thank you, BS, so much for being on the show. Thank you for chatting and sharing your thoughts. I think this has been a great talk. And I feel like so helpful for our audience of creative listeners.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. This has been a blast. You're awesome.
Thanks. I was like, oh, I should say thank you. All right, cool.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.